Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Let's talk some buckets. It's probably been too long since Stephen Bardo has been on the show, but I got the chance to hang out with him a little bit last week because he was just talking basketball at the Velvet Lounge with a bunch of hoop heads, and it was fun. It was fun to be in that environment. He's actually going to be doing that again. So if you're in the city and you want to go have some real fun watching basketball, Stephen Bardo is going to be at the Velvet Lounge, 67 East Cermak, tomorrow night watching the NBA playoffs and doing a Facebook Live taping. Kendall Gill is going to be there. My man Cameron Smith is going to be there as well. I'm telling you from my experience last week, if you go, you will have fun. And now Stephen joins me here on The Score. What's up, Stephen?
Oh, Lawrence, man, add that to my bill, my man. I appreciate that.
No, it's all good. I had a great time last week. You know, I wouldn't necessarily call myself a hoop head. I know enough to have a cogent conversation with you guys, but it was fun seeing some of the firepower in that place. You were there. Jason Goff was there. Vincent Goodwill was there. I didn't even know Cliff Levingston was in the building, and I looked over, and the OG was in the corner.
Yeah, that was a great mix of people there, man, and we just – have a really good time talking the game, as you mentioned, and there's some hot topics always brewing in the NBA that seem to bubble up in a situation like that.
Let me walk through a couple of these series with you. And right now, you know, Miami and Philadelphia are heading into the fourth quarter of that game really tight. I want to start with the team that's probably nearest and dearest to Bulls fans' heart, because they're the Minnesota Bulls. Like, Tibbs has like all of the old Bulls. We were looking it up. Aaron Brooks is on that team. JL3 is in the front office for the Minnesota Timberwolves. So it's
wow. It's
a bunch of old Bulls, and they're down 2-0 to the Rockets, as they should be, because James Harden is unguardable. A question that we throw around here, and this is mostly Tony, because Tony gets mad whenever he sees the James Harden step back. Is that a travel?
In today's game, no. I think it looks like a travel at times, but what they're letting him get away with and what they're letting other players get away with, that's not a travel.
Then how in the world do you guard that?
You hope that he either had food poisoning or he's got off night, because he's at 6'6", as strong as he is, and he's lefty, so he's got that advantage anyway. It's very difficult to stop. You just have to hope that he's off.
Yeah, it's amazing, like, to watch him, and he's been great. For your money, is he the MVP?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you could throw Little Rage, Russell Westbrook in there as well, because he's averaged a triple-double. How he got it was somewhat controversial to certain old-school types. However, he did it for a second year in a row, so I think he needs to be in consideration, but I definitely think Harden is the MVP.
Yeah, you blew the spot up last week when the conversation started, and we started talking about another guy who, honestly, you could make the MVP every year, and maybe it's unfair that we eliminate LeBron for the conversation, but you blew the spot up when you were talking about LeBron versus Michael Jordan. Before I ask you to give your opinion on this, which I already know, I wanted to ask you this. Why do you think it bothers Bulls fans so much when we compare LeBron to Michael?
I think what happens is LeBron is more Magic to me. He's not really Jordan. Jordan was a closer, a tremendous scorer, a tremendous defender, and tremendous competitor. And so from a pure basketball sense, Jordan was it for me for a long, long time. But just recently, LeBron's statistics and his consistency on and off the floor have kind of put him in a higher position, in my opinion.
But why do Bulls fans get so mad? Like, what is it about this thing that, like, you can't have the conversation? And I think it was Jay who brought up the point where you can talk about rings all you want, but if we're only talking about rings, then the conversation stops and starts with Bill Russell.
Yes, that's true. And I think a lot of times it's a prideful thing. It's a Chi-Town thing. You know, Jordan is one of ours. And I think it's some of that. And I think also that they see LeBron in certain situations early in his career where he would shy away from the biggest moments. You know, he was more content to make the pass as opposed to making the play. So I think there's a lot of factors that go into that. But I think a lot of it is just really Chicago pride and understanding that Jordan was just a killer. He just had a way of taking control of games and not letting it go.
When you played, whether it's college or pros, was there a player that had the ability, I don't mean the equal ability of talent, but the ability that LeBron has? Like, we all knew what LeBron was going to do last night. Like, every yep. basketball fan knew what was getting ready to happen. Did you ever play with a player that when they wanted to, they could get their points, and you were just kind of going, man, you should do that all the time?
Yeah, I caught Joe Dumars in the back of his career, and I saw him even toward the end of his career will himself to a 23-point quarter. I think it was the third quarter in a game because he got challenged and he rose to the challenge. So I've been around guys like that. Tony Dawson is another guy that comes to mind. He can score in a phone booth. Jerry Stackhouse's brother. I believe he played at Florida State in college, but guy could really, really score. He never had a chance to play at the NBA level. So I've been around guys like that where they turn it up.
I agree with you. I've always kind of felt like LeBron is Magic, and he's not Jordan because of his approach. It's not just it's his approach to the game that he would be more comfortable being a facilitator in a lot of situations. The problem that this Cleveland team is having, and they've reshuffled the deck a couple of times now, he doesn't seem to have enough help. Now, this isn't to say, like, as I said on Saturday, he dragged a bag of bums to six games against perhaps the greatest team that we've ever seen. So we know that it's still in him to do it, but I swear, it's like, could the brother get some help?
Yeah, you know, I thought some of those additions, those midseason additions, were really going to kick in by this point. George Hill, Rodney Hood is the one that's really surprised me with his inability to bring something of a scoring punch because he was really lethal at Utah. Larry Nance Jr. may have been the best pickup, and he's added the most out of Jordan Clarkson, I believe, is the other player. So, you know, he does need some help, man, but I think people have become used to seeing LeBron win regardless of who's around him. And I think it's an unfair for people to expect that, but that's just the way it is.
Talking with Stephen Bardo, he of the Flying Illini. You can check him out on Big Ten Network, Fox Sports 1, with the Chicago Sky, all sorts of stuff. I know that you know the NBA game, and I love to, like, pick your brain on that, but most people love you as a college basketball analyst. So I want to ask you about, because we actually haven't even had the chance, even on a personal level, to talk about this yet. What did you take away from what Loyola did this past year?
I absolutely loved it, Lawrence. It was so refreshing to see the city of Chicago get behind a college basketball team. And it hasn't happened in a while. It happened last year with Northwestern. but it hadn't happened before that for three consecutive years. And so I think the dearth of NCAA tournament teams in the state and in the region really kind of dampened, dampened the appetite for college basketball in Chicago. And to have a school and a team like Loyola dominate the Missouri Valley Conference, come through and really slay Goliath along the way, they really showed well, and they had Chicago kids as an integral part of it. I mean, it was a magical run.
What do you think the impact of that is if you're, let's say, a three-star player that has some options about where to go? How does that impact you to know if you're a local kid that there might be an option of playing at a place like Loyola and finding yourself in the NCAA tournament?
You know, Lawrence, I think that's always been there. I think the potential at UIC, the potential at Northwestern, at DePaul, you know, at all these schools, you have the potential with the amount of talent that's in this city. So if it's ever a situation where these schools could continue to try to keep the majority of the talent here, I know that's a lot harder now because everyone's on television. But the more that they can do that, the more successful they'll be. And all these schools could have success because the last time they had it, each one of those schools and those teams had integral parts being from Chicago.
So if that's the case, then I need to know what Moser's secret is. How was he able to take two- and three-star players and turn them into a Final Four team?
Well, he does well. He and his staff do well with player development. That's a key component of what they've done. And that's so important at that level, at the Missouri Valley Conference level, because you've got grown men. You know, the juniors and seniors still dominate that conference, unlike a lot of the Power Five conferences. So, you know, you have a more long-term approach with the players that you recruit. I believe it's Milton Doyle last year.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the NBA right now. He's been back and forth between the NBA and the G League. He's a guy that started out at Kansas, came back home and came to Loyola and really finished out his career in strong fashion. And so those stories and those successes start to come out. I think that they'll be able to get those three-star players that are looking elsewhere to possibly stay home.
Okay, when you say player development, get real. You can get as basketball talky as possible. Get wonky if you want. What do you mean when you say player development at the college level? What does that entail?
Well, a young man, let's see, Dante Ingram, he'd come from a championship program at Simeon. The guys at the barbershop on 51st Street will hurt me, Lawrence, if I don't say it like that, like Simeon.
You got to say Simeon, or you can't, yeah, or you can't Simeon. Go down Vincennes if you don't say it that way.
That's right. And so, you know, a guy like Dante, man, he comes in and he knows how to win. He's tough. He's got great size. And he needed to smooth out his jumper. He needed to smooth some things out. Because typically when freshmen at that level come in, there's something in their game that doesn't allow them to go to a higher level, because believe me, everybody playing competitively would love to be at the highest level. They all would. But there's a reason why they go to a level that is considered, not always is, but is considered a level lower than Power Five. So I think that that's what I see when I talk about player development, where guys have, they may need to get stronger. They may need to work on their left hand. They may need a counter on the left block. You know, most need to expand their ability to pass off the bounce. You can practice and develop all those things, and that's some of what I'm talking about.
Look, you played in a power conference. You call games in power conferences. I'm wondering, from someone who's a basketball lifer, the situation that Porter Moser is in now, look, he's clearly staying for this upcoming season. But if he has another season that's even close to what happened last year at Loyola, there are going to be bigger programs that will tempt him with cash. If you were coaching right now, if you were in Porter Moser's space right now, what would be important to you? Would it be building – would you want to build Wichita, like Wichita State, or would you want to inherit St. John's or Seton Hall?
Great question. You know, when you look at the situations that are in the Big East, there's some very historically laden programs. And I think sometimes the perception of those programs is different than their current reality. And some of those places struggle for various reasons, whether it's geography, whether it's past success of the local kids. There's a lot that goes into that. But, man, that's a great question. Would he want to build Wichita State, or would he want to bring up St. John's or revive one of those? Man, it's hard to say. He seems like he'd want to be the guy that would build something from scratch.
It does seem that way.
Yeah. You know, because the thing is, when you go to dorms and you go to around campus and you're promoting the program like that, that's why they're having success. I mean, if your players see your coach busting their tail like that and trying to get the word out and trying to be creative, bringing in Eric Thomas to speak through his relationship with Drew Valentine, the assistant coach. I mean, just those little things will endear those players to him, and that will travel regardless of where he is.
Steven, what can people expect if they come and see you tomorrow at Velvet Lounge and watch the game? What can they expect?
They can expect some hoop heads who are very passionate about the game. There'll be former NBA players in the house. There will be sports media members, and it will be a lot of fun. I'm trying to create something where the hoop heads of Chicago can come and exchange ideas and debate in a, you know, fun place where we can also watch the game. And that's what you should expect. And if you do come, bring your sharpest questions. There's no holds barred in there, so you're not going to hurt anybody. We all got thick skin.
I know that's right, and it was a fun time last week, and I implore you, if you are a hoophead, you're in the South Loop or on the South Side, go down to Velvet Lounge tomorrow between 6 and 10. Go see Steven Bardo. It's a good time. Trust me, it's a great way to share the game of basketball. And like you said, folks talk a lot of junk in the barbershop, and then you put a microphone and a camera in front of them, and now they don't want to say anything.
That's right. That's right.
Steven, thanks for jumping on the show, man. I appreciate you.
Hey, thanks a lot, Lawrence. Appreciate it, my man.
That's Steven Bardo. We had a good time. Tony, didn't you have fun?
It was fun. I enjoyed myself.
See?
I see a lot of important basketball people. I'm a basketball head, so it was cool connecting with them.
Yeah, I wish you would talk more about basketball. I mean, because you're like the most, of all the people that are here at the Score now, you're like the most qualified to talk, like, actual experience playing the game. Like, you could actually explain pick and roll. Because that's what they had you doing. Where'd you play? Like Revis or wherever it was?
Yeah, Revis High School.
See?
Yeah. Small experience.
You were the man. You were the man.
And that is a travel.
I know.
That is a travel.
I know you feel strongly about that, which is good. This segment was brought to you by Tomorrow Sleep, a new Tomorrow hybrid mattress designed by sleep experts at Serta Simmons. Visit gettomorrowsleep.com. Use code TRAFFIC3. For $200 off when you spend $500 or more. And if you need legal advice by a reputable attorney, send questions that you want answered to cbschicago.com/legaladvice or look online for free Legal Fridays with Horowitz, Horowitz & Associates. That's cbschicago.com/legaladvice. I've got some more football things I want to talk about. And trust me, before we get out of here tonight, you're going to hear from Mitchell Trubisky. In fact, we're going to do that at 9 o'clock. You'll hear what Mitchell had to say. And there was some stuff that happened on the show yesterday that I wanted to bring back. I want to bring back a Bears discussion and a career discussion that you are not going to believe. All that and more as we go through the Bears schedule. It's out. I don't know any of the teams on it. Neither do you. But whatever. I guess we can still speculate. Back after this on The Score.
Baez lines one toward right center. That's in the gap. Bates said it's going to go all the way to the vines. Chased down by Fowler. It's a double for Baez. He's going to try for three as the throw comes in. He's got a triple. He's got a triple.
Highlight courtesy of The Score. Another triple for Javi Baez. He's got three of them so far. He's got as many triples as he has singles so far this season. Slugging 680 for the season is Javi Baez. And when you start to look at, I'm so excited, I'm so scared about watching him at the plate. Tony, you didn't get that reference, did you? It's fine. It's fine. There's actually two references in there, and I'm sure you didn't get either one of them. Anyway, watching Javier Baez go opposite field, that's an encouraging sign. Looking at him, and you look at the first couple of bats last night, the first bat today, where you see he's looking to do it, that he's not getting jammed, that he is trying to use right field as a way to make himself, at least I think, make himself a better hitter, should be exciting for you. As a Cubs fan, you should be excited. If that guy, like, clicks on, when I look at the diamond of the Cubs, I know that there are two legitimate MVP candidates, one on third, one on first. I think there's another one to plate, and I think had he not gotten hurt last year, he'd have been in the mix. I also think the guy at second base could turn into one. And he's got a lot of style that's going to sway a lot of people. I'll give you more on his numbers after Julie is done with his scoreboard update. Thanks to Julie for the scoreboard update. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 10 o'clock tonight. And when I'm done, Julie takes over the microphone. That's how it works, man. That's how we get down. She'll be on from 10 until midnight. I want to go back to Baez. Baez, over the last seven games, hitting .344, five home runs, 12 RBIs. Struck out seven times. He's walked once. It is funny to look at his numbers and see a guy who has as many triples as he does singles. Three. He's got three doubles and he's got five home runs. It's amazing. It's fun. The triple's fun. And Javi's a really good base runner. Now, today he was a little sloppy in the field. And you're going to have some of those moments with him. Like when he tried to double up the guy on third, who I had no idea why he was running. Why are you running? Doesn't make any sense. It's a Mike Matheny managed team right there, folks. I'll never get tired of crackbacking. Never. But Baez was hitting second today. I also want to talk about the guy who hit first today, but we'll get to that in a moment. Here's what Madden said about Baez being moved up in the lineup.
I just wanted to get some energy at the top. That's it. I mean, he's been doing well. I mean, I could have left him in six or seven. He's been getting a lot of opportunities. He has, for the most part, he might take that out of control swing, but then he comes right back to reality pretty quickly now, whereas that one will lead to the second one, then to the third one, then he come walking back. So I think he's making in at bat adjustments.
Yeah. Tony, is there another one in there? Or is that it? Because the other part of that is Madden talking about how he thinks that Javier Baez may turn into Manny Ramirez. That he might have a player who could hit the way Manny Ramirez played. And on top of that, Baez brings a glove to the field. If he's talking, I mean, clearly, Javi's got baseball smarts that are through the roof. Like, his instincts are really good, too. Cares about the game. Plays it with a joy That's a lot of fun to watch. But if he does get to a point where you can't get him out consistently by throwing pitches in the dirt in the left-handed batter's box, he will become a terror in this league. His bat speed is unreal. And you saw it when he uncorked on that fastball a couple nights ago. And he hits the ball out on a night where you're not really supposed to hit the ball out of the ballpark. It's lightning quick. I think that there is some validity to what Madden is talking about. Not that he needs me to validate his baseball opinions, but I don't think it's crazy that Baez can be a world-class hitter if he takes that deficiency. And he doesn't have to make it a strength. Like, remember, like, Rizzo's deficiency was he couldn't hit lefties. And then he worked on it and worked on it and worked on it, and now he hits lefties great. I'm not saying that Baez needs to always double that pitch. But if he can lay off of it, then pitchers have got to come to him. And when they do, it's a problem. Because that guy will terrorize you. I also want to talk about the guy hitting at the top of the order today. I am an Albert Almora Jr. fan. I want to see him play center field every day. Period. I know that they would prefer to platoon him, but damn it, I just don't think there's a better option. I'm not saying that he should lead off every day, but if the Cubs want their defensive numbers to look right, then they need to have an outfield. You gotta mix it up. Schwarber's hitting right now, so he stays in the lineup too. But left field is Schwarber and Happ. Almora and Hayward in center and right. Play those guys as long as you can.
But he can't hit right-handers, Lawrence.
Except for today.
Exactly.
I wish he would be given a more consistent chance to hit right-handers. It's strange. Like it's one thing that kind of bugs me about, and there's not a lot to be mad about with the Cubs as an organization, but I do think it's weird that Schwarber will get every chance, every possible chance. Almora has two bad weeks against right-handers and is like, nope, can only hit lefties. Nope, can't put him out there.
Which is weird because I would peg Theo and Jed and Madden as, you know, not emotionally attached to any of these guys.
No, they are.
But they're attached to Schwarber.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I mean, if you read the books about them, about them putting this thing together, they're attached to Almora too. Like he's special to them as well. But it doesn't seem like he's being rewarded with the playing time that Kyle Schwarber is getting. So if you're keeping a list, the three guys that I love on that team, Baez, Contreras, and Almora. And you know me, I'd flip Addison Russell and Javi Baez in a heartbeat. Not that Javi helped my case today defensively. But more Albert Almora Jr. I'm like the clapping emoji right now on Twitter. More of it.
I mean, they need to look no further than what they did with Anthony Rizzo. Remember, he struggled versus left-handers when he first came up to the Cubs. He worked on it, got 150 games in him, and now he kills left-handers.
Yep. He took a weakness and turned it into a strength.
But maybe they're thinking they don't have the time now. They're trying to win. They're trying to get going where you can put guys out there to work on things versus when Rizzo was doing it, the expectations weren't there yet.
All of their guys are working on things. Ian Happ's not nobody's leadoff man. And how many times they let Schwarber lead off last year? They were trying to win last year, and he led off with 34 times.
I mean, that is a team where a guy like Almora can just be the prospect, the guy who's trying to develop because they have enough offensive firepower like in Javi and
right.
Brian and all the rest of the guys to pick him up if he does fall.
Absolutely. So I hope that what we're seeing is them being more open to playing Albert Almora Jr. more often against right-handers. I mean, that's as hard as I want to go on the subject. I just know I feel like they're a better team when he's in center and Hayward's in right. Period. A texter says, oh my God, this is so bad, I have to read it. Is Julie in the update studio? Jules, you there?
I am.
I have a text that's so bad, I have to read it.
All right, hit me.
You're not going to like it.
Is it about my guy?
No. Everyone's kind of with us on the Almora thing.
Okay.
I think that we're that posse.
I know.
Like, me and you are the Almora gang. That's who we are. This texter says, so would you say Ian isn't what's happening?
Go to break.
You're right, Tony. That is awful. We need to go to break right damn now. So the Bears schedule is out, if you hadn't heard. Here it is. September 9th, Sunday Night Football against the Packers at Lambeau Field. September 17th, Monday Night Football against the Seahawks at Soldier Field. September 23rd, they get the reunion with Mike Glennon. Yeah. At Phoenix, 3:25 game there. September 30th, a noon kickoff against Tampa Bay. Bye week, week 5, October 14th, noon kickoff at the Dolphins. Week 7 against the Patriots at home, noon kickoff. Week 8, October 28th against the Jets at home. Week 9, November 4th at Bills Mafia. Week 10, November 11th at home against the Lions, noon kick. Week 11, November 18th against the Vikings at home, noon kick. Week 12, November 22nd, that's Thanksgiving, against the Lions, 11:30 kick. So they're the curtain jerker for the day. I actually really love, that they added the Thursday night game to that whole thing. This is football and food all day, all day.
I think they should take one or both of those teams off, either Dallas or Detroit, and let everybody
spread
get
the wealth.
Some. Yeah.
I thought there was some sort of agreement in place that the Lions would always play on Thanksgiving. Like, there's some sort of like grandfathered agreement that they'll always play.
I mean, because now they're kind of decent, but, you know, for years on end, they were bad. They were the Lions.
Yeah.
And we had to watch them every Thanksgiving. And we were tired of that.
We are tired of that.
And
but
I can't wait until we play Matthew Stafford. You know I hate him.
You hate Matthew
Stafford.
Yeah,
it's a nice Viking sandwich with the Lions bread.
Turn your microphone off. Week 13 against the Giants, December 2nd. That's a new kick. Remember, most of these, if the Bears are good, those games, a lot of these games could be flexed out. They get the Rams week 14, noon kickoff, that game at Soldier Field. December 16th, they take on the Packers at home. Noon kickoff, a 3:05 kickoff for the game at San Francisco on December 23rd, and they finish the season as per usual against the Vikings on December 30th. Noon kickoff for that one. This segment being brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. Last night, I had a great conversation with Chris Emma, who covers the Bears for us here at The Score. The whole thing is up, and I think the whole thing is worth you listening to. So tomorrow or later on tonight at some point, if you want to check out the full thing, 670thescore.com/Lawrence Holmes Show. But there was a particular segment that I wanted you to hear tonight, and it was us talking about the Bears and their draft position. A lot of people have attached the Bears and Quentin Nelson. I wanted to pick Emma's brain about whether or not that made sense.
Here's the scenario I see playing out, and it's going to take, you know, a few different circumstances to go the Bears' way. It'll take probably four quarterbacks going in the top seven and Saquon Barkley, and then you get to the point where it's Fitzpatrick, Chubb, or Nelson that follows their way. Now, the interesting one to follow when it comes to Nelson is the Indianapolis Colts, because for years they've been looking to get protection for Andrew Luck, and this is a guy who's been beaten up now in his career. He's trying to come back healthy and kind of reinvent himself in a way. A guy who was the number one overall pick a few years ago. Seems like such a natural fit, right? I mean, putting Chubb to that offensive line in Indianapolis. But keep in mind what Chris Ballard has done since taking over that job a year and a half ago, Lawrence, and that's building with defense. I think what's going to happen is the Colts are going to be the team to trade down with the Bills. The Bills will give up their 12th pick and their 22nd pick. I think the Bills are going to go up to that number six
slot
and get the quarterback they've been looking for. Now, the Broncos could be the same team to do it, but I'm looking at the Colts right now. And then from there, the Colts can get picks 12 and 22 and get defensive players, or maybe find somebody like a Mike McGlinchey and add that guy to the offensive line instead. That's how Nelson could fall to the Bears. I also think the Broncos are going to be interested in finding a quarterback because I don't think they're really sold on Case Keenum long term. I think he's more of kind of the short term guy. They hope he can be the starter while they develop somebody like a Josh Rosen or maybe a Baker Mayfield, somebody of that nature. I think it's going to be four quarterbacks going in that top seven, Barkley as well, and the Bears are going to get somebody who's probably a top three player on their board.
What do you think of Nelson as a prospect? What have people told you?
I mean, you really see it all in film. The guy's phenomenal. The scouts are in love with him, and I can't remember a player that's really been so universally celebrated before the NFL draft by scouts, by the experts, everybody around the league just celebrates what this guy is because he's got Pro Bowl potential starting his rookie year and every year from there on out. If you're looking to get a guy who you can count on your offensive line for 10 years for the next decade, that's it. He makes your offensive line that much better. If you're the Bears, he secures your investment in 23-year-old Mitchell Trubisky. You feel good about that guy protecting him, and then it makes Cody Whitehair a better player, makes Kyle Long a better player. It makes Jordan Howard a better runner, Tariq Cohen, whatever you want to do with this offense. Somebody like Nelson enhances you that way. He's the safest pick because he's by far the best pick. It's not the sexiest thing because it's a guard, and you don't see guards really going in the top five or top 10 in the NFL draft. He's somebody that's more than deserving because he's got major potential. You're hearing scouts say he's a Hall of Fame type player down the road. That's a really crazy thing for a scout to say ahead of the NFL draft. But the belief is real in this kid. He's a mauler. He's somebody who just shoves you downfield and dominates you. He makes everybody on your offense better.
The last one, when you brought that up about the way scouts have reacted to him, the last player that comes to mind for me that you heard scouts kind of universally love was Andrew Luck. That him, he's a can't miss, that he's pro ready. Like, this is a guy that's going to go to Pro Bowls. That's the last time I remember scouts kind of going gaga for talent. In your opinion, regardless of position, which player is the best fit for the Bears if they stay at eight? Is it Nelson? Are there other players that make more sense to you for what you think the Bears are going to be over the next couple years?
I think the two most natural fits right now is Nelson and Bradley Chubb, because the Bears have been looking for that five technique alongside Akeem Hicks and Eddie Goldman. He's the best pass rusher in this draft, and he's somebody that really transformed that defensive front. It's the guy they've really been looking to find. It's the guy they frankly hope that Jonathan Bullard could be. Right away, you plug him in, he's an impact pass rusher. He's somebody that really puts the pressure on a quarterback. Not to mention, he makes life easier for Goldman and Hicks. He makes life easier for those outside linebackers, which, by the way, you're not so sure on right now. That's a position of need, a question as well. Somebody like Chubb, if you put him into that defensive front, he makes everybody better on that defense. He allows, somebody like Leonard Floyd to be a more effective rusher because Chubb's drawing the attention. That leaves a lane open or distracts a tackle or takes a guard away. That really helps the Bears defense and gives Vic Fangio what he's looking for a defense that believes it can take a jump this season and go from top 10 to top 5, pressure quarterbacks in a different way and use that defensive front to force turnovers. Chubb's a natural fit. I mean, he plugs right into that defense the same way Nelson would to that offensive line. So those are probably the two guys that help right away and help long term as well.
This is CBS's, and that was Chris Emma, by the way, from our staff. Really good stuff. Lindsey Wilhite said, does he sound like a young Coomer? He does. That's a good call. Sounds like a young Ron Coomer. Funk away. CBS Sports has their latest mock draft. Here's what they say. Number one, Cleveland takes Josh Allen. Good luck. Do you know that Josh Allen hasn't had a 60% completion mark in his entire football career?
Come on, completion percentage doesn't matter, right?
Like, not even in high school.
And he only played in the Mountain West, too. So I would think, you know, throwing the passes that he does out there, he should be a little bit more accurate.
That's crazy. I know that he can throw the ball 90 yards, but if he doesn't know where it's going, anyway.
You know, coaches are kind of like wanting to shape and mold. He already has the attributes, so he's like, I can bring this guy in and I can make this guy the top quarterback, like Favre. He's got the arm talent. All he needs is the smarts from me.
Okay.
And they feel that way. They're like, this is what we need. Instead of getting a guy like Baker Mayfield, who is a little short but plays the position right.
Yeah, Sam Darnold fumbles too much for me. I don't like him as a prospect because of that. And this year, people are saying, here's what I do find a little bit annoying about the draft process. People tell you that none of the combine stuff matters. What matters is the tape. The tape that I saw of Darnold at USC last year showed me a quarterback that went backwards and struggles to hold on to the ball when the pocket's dirty and holds the ball like a loaf of bread when he's out there running. Anyway, that's not why you called. The Jets, they have them taking Baker Mayfield at number 3, Josh Rosen going to the Bills at number 4, Bradley Chubb at 5, although there's some talk now that Denver might be in a dealing mood. Roquan Smith at 6 at the Colts. Saquon Barkley, that'd be fun. Saquon Barkley, number 7 to Tampa Bay, and Quentin Nelson going number 8 to the Bears. If I'm the Colts, I can't let Quentin Nelson get past me. I can't. Andrew Luck has been getting his head just destroyed. He needs offensive line help. And if this guy is as good as everyone makes him out to be, I don't know how you pass up that if you're them for a linebacker. I just don't know how you do it. The last two picks of the top 10 be the Niners at 9 taking Tremaine Edmonds. And there are already a bunch of people like, oh, the Niners are behind the Bears. Maybe they'll, you know, be some sort of trade thing. And the Raiders getting Denzel Ward. The Bears don't need a quarterback. They already have one. And now he's got a new system that he has to learn. The miseducation of Mitch Trubisky continues. We're going to hear what the quarterback had to say about his first minicamp with Matt Nagy, and we'll hear that next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.